times you want.
Y'all got all day. I'm Jamie, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jamie.
I said that I've been praying about this a lot, so if I mess up, I'm going to blame God like I used to. So. let me say this. My sobriety date is March 23rd, 2008, and have a home group, the Tuesday Night Rapid Ann group. And I have a sponsor who is not in the state anymore, but we talk. And so I'm very nervous, by the way, if y'all haven't noticed. I was born in Orange, and I was trying to think about, like, how I would describe my life growing up. And I think that I don't want to out or blame my family for any part of my alcoholism, so I would like to say that I did grow up with a lot of alcohol in my life, and I couldn't tell you when I had my first drink because sometimes my family likes to celebrate first birthdays and stuff with sharing a little champagne with the kids, so I didn't get drunk or anything that I'm aware of, but I was, I'm not going to say I felt like, a lot of people say that they felt different or like something was wrong with them as a kid. Everybody else felt there was something wrong with me except for me. So, I was thinking about, as a kid, the kind of kid I was is I was a kid that had a loving heart, but, a little bit on the impulsive side, and I was one of those kids that on your report card, you know, where it says like listens and follows directions, every time it was checked as no, I do not do that, or plays well with others, no, I did not do that, uses time wisely, no, I did not do that either. I think in the second grade, one of my teachers wrote on my report card, please ask Jamie not to make rooster noises during class. But that's the kind of kid I was, you know. I was, like, always trying to, like, be out there and, hey, here I am, and, you know, that kind of thing. So, so I kind of grew up like that, and I wasn't much of a rule follower. But, I don't think I meant to be bad. I was just kind of naturally that way. So my first conscious drink, I was 8. And I was at a high school football game. And my dad had taken me and my sister, whatever, over there. And some of my little friends, I got a little Evan Williams from one of their older siblings or whatever, and we went to the playground, and I don't really remember much of it, but I know that was my first, you know, like, conscious drink that I had. I didn't drink every day after that or anything, and I was 8, so I did really start getting into the liquor and beer stash, I would say about 12. And I liked alcohol. I still like alcohol. It just doesn't like me. You know, it doesn't do good things for me in my life. But so to back up a little bit, because this is kind of a big part of my story, I started swimming when I was, I think, like 11. And this was a really good and bad experience for me. I kind of excelled pretty quickly in what I was doing, but I had a really bad experience with my coach, who, you know, liked young girls and stuff like that. So you know, in that way, it was a bad experience. And later, I think I would probably use that as, you know, another excuse to drink. And so I just want to throw that out there because, you know, it's part of my story. So, let's see. I drank whenever I got the opportunity, and I got the opportunity a lot. But I was swimming a lot, and I was gone a lot, and I wasn't participating in my family very much, and it was kind of hard, but you know, there was a lot of good things happening during that time too, because I kind of excelled in swimming. So when I was 16, I went to Olympic trials, and I didn't make the team or anything, but I did go. And, you know, when I didn't make the team, I think that was, you know, that gave me a bigger excuse to, you know, go party and hang out with my friends. And by the time I was, like, this age, I was a pretty angry person. I had a really short fuse. I didn't mind getting in a fight, you know. I kind of egged that kind of stuff on. And, you know, so I liked drinking, and, you know, drinking was a good time, and I had some buddies, and we used to drive around and run the roads, and, you know, it's like, hey, let's go D&D, you know, drink and drive, and, you know, that was a good thing, you know. So, I mean, it's amazing that we survived through all that, and so that kind of went on for a while, and I got in trouble, really big trouble, my first time with, you know, specifically with drinking, when I went to a bonfire at the high school, and I was drunk. We'd been riding around in somebody's truck all day, up in the back of the truck with all the beer flying everywhere, and, you know, I had a little crazy streak in me, and so, you know, I decided it'd be a cool idea to, like, go walk around in the bonfire, and teachers didn't think that was such a good idea, but, so I got kicked out of school, and I had been in trouble a lot, so the principal called my dad in, of all things, you know. My dad's sitting there, and I was like, oh, man, this is really bad. So, they said I couldn't come back to school until I'd seen a psychiatrist. So, boy, did I have fun with that. I was drinking his head. You know, I was not all interested in, like, getting help or something like that because, you know, like, I didn't really think I had a problem with alcohol. You know, I just got in trouble for alcohol, and I drank a lot, but I didn't have a problem. So I was actually, it was suggested to me at that time to go to AA. And I was like, are you kidding me? What is it? You know? And they're like, he's like, well, it's alcoholics. And he starts explaining it to me. And I was like, no way. So, and I didn't go. So anyway, I was coming out of high school, and my grades, oh, my God, my grades were so bad that I couldn't get into a major university because you had to have a 2.0 to actually be eligible to compete. So, you know, all those recruiting trips were no good because I couldn't compete. I would have had to redshirt, so that means no scholarship. And but I got into a junior college down in Florida, and that was good. That was their main sport, and even though it was a junior college. So I went down to Florida when I was 17, and I was kind of on my own, you know. My folks didn't come down there, and they never saw a school. I had never seen the school or anything, but I got down there, and I showed them how to drink down there in Florida. Showed my teammates how to drink. And I showed them so good that I wasn't there 2 months before I was told, you're going to treatment or you're getting out of here. You know, so I went to treatment, of course. And it didn't take. I don't know why, but it just didn't take. So, I didn't think I had a problem. You know, I knew the alcohol got me in trouble, but getting in trouble didn't necessarily mean I had a problem, right? You know? So somehow I made it through all that, and I probably didn't stay sober more than maybe a couple months or something like that, and so I started drinking again, having a good time and everything, and I just, you know, like I know back then even I was, you know, like I always portrayed this like fun, you know, kind of side, and I was a hurting pup inside. I was hurting and I was angry and I was lonely and I was resentful and, you know, I had all the alcoholic characteristics, you know. But nobody, most people didn't know that. Periodically I'd slip up and somebody would see it, but for the most part, you know, I was pretty, you know, to myself about stuff like that. And after I graduated from Indian River, I got recruited and I chose to go to Auburn to school and swam on a scholarship. And I was there for 2 months. And I was told, you're going to treatment or you're going home. So, you know, I'm not even drinking age yet. And I've already been told this 3 times. So, anyway, so I went to treatment. Of course. And it didn't take again. 3 times Auburn sent me to treatment. 3 times. Like within 3 months. It went 3 months, but, you know, in a very short period of time. And I'd relapse, and they'd send me back, and I'd relapse, and they'd send me back. And they paid for it, even. So I get through my first year at Auburn, and I had qualified for Olympic trials in '88, and I just I went back down to Florida to train, and I really liked my coach down there and everything. So I went down there, and it was really weird. I had a lot of teammates there, and we all lifeguarded together, and we all drank together, and we had a really good time. And when it got closer and closer to time for trials, they would say, okay, Jamie, this is your last weekend. You got to get serious, you know. And I'd be like, okay, all right, it's my last weekend. And so next weekend would come, and they'd be like, all right, Jamie, it's got to be your last weekend. You got to quit drinking, you know. You got to be serious about this. And I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be serious about it. And I drank down the time I went to trials. And I swam like crap. And, you know, after that, it was like my whole world had just, it was gone. And that was hard, you know. I swam for 13 years. And that was a hard pill to swallow, and it took me, you know, it took me to getting into recovery to get over that, you know, to like that failure thing, and I felt like a failure in a huge way, because that was like that was the only thing that probably kept me on any kind of straight and narrow. I was on straight and narrow, but I could have really been flying off everywhere if I hadn't had swimming. So. I finished out my last year in Auburn, and I think at some point there I was back in treatment, somewhere in there. Anyway, I was in treatment again, and it kind of took, but I kind of got a relationship with my counselor, and the rule was no drinking. Well, okay, so now I'm a psycho. Yep. I'm a psychotic person, and they realize I'm a little psychotic, so I was sober from alcohol for 6 years. And I was taking every psychotropic medication that you can imagine, and I walked around like this all the time. You know, so I couldn't drink because I couldn't stay awake long enough to drink. And so when I did relapse, I got in all kinds of trouble right there in the beginning. I had a gun under my seat. I was not going to drink. Well, no, I take that back. I had already drank. I threw up after 3 beers. And then I decided that I really need to do some hard stuff, so I'm going to go get some crack. And I was in a crack neighborhood, and I had a gun under my seat, and I had crack or something, yeah, paraphernalia or something like that, and almost got put in jail because they were all up on the hood of my truck looking in there. They knew something was in there, but so I really almost got in a lot of trouble, and I went through a really, really bad period of time where I got really depressed, and I had suicide notes everywhere, and I could go back. I started thinking about suicide like when I was 12, so anyway, to keep that going, but I went through a really bad time. I mean, I went like 5 days, I didn't answer the phone, I didn't answer the door. You know, I just really thought that somehow I would just die just being there. I mean, I don't know how it's going to happen. It's just going to happen, you know. And I was sure of it, that it was going to happen. And I actually ended up with a unity group. It was kind of like full of misfits like myself. And I got involved in that. I learned a lot about my spirituality then. However, I did not stop drinking. And my drinking progressed, and but I did learn a lot about what my concept of God is, and I held on to that. I held on to it through all this stuff. I held on to what I truly believe in. And after everything happened, I never felt like, you know, like I got abandoned. I felt like, you know, you're there, and I don't want you there because I want to do what I'm doing. I'm very careful with my time here. Anyway, I was down in Alabama then. I moved back to Virginia, bought a little house. I was drinking like crazy. And I was working like 14 hours a day on this house, and I was picking up sheetrock and toilets, and I was doing all this stuff, and I got hurt. And I ruptured a disc in my back, and it crushed my spinal cord. And I was so smart that I went for 9 days without going to the real doctor about it. I thought I could go to a chiropractor, and he would fix it. And so, you know, I'm in terrible, excruciating pain, and I'm just eating pain pills and drinking every single thing I can get my hands on. And so this ended up being a big problem for me. And it would create a huge problem for me later on, not just the back injury. I had 5 surgeries there, you know, after that and everything. But I was introduced to pain medication, and it's nothing like a bunch of alcohol with a couple of pain pills or, you know, whatever. So, and I had a legitimate reason to be on them. So, you know, like doctors felt bad for me. Because I got sciatica 24/7, you know. I had a doctor tell me, you're going to be on these for the rest of your life. And so I was okay with that because I really liked them. things really started decreasing from here. And I got into a relationship, and I can't even tell you how crazy I got, and I can kind of tell you how crazy I got, but it's all a long story. So I was crazy. I should have died. I did crazy things. I made other people do crazy things. You know, I had a wise idea one time that it'd be great to rappel down the side of a parking garage with a tow rope, you know. So, I mean, these are kinds of things. I mean, really, I did lots of these things that really should have killed me. And I guess, you know, at this point I look at it and, you know, that there is some plan for me. I didn't really see it then, but I was angry, and I was just, I mean, it's just really kind of even hard to describe. I didn't care about anything. I didn't care about anybody. My parents did something that I disliked, so I didn't speak to them for 5 years. You know, not my whole family. They lived right there, and I didn't speak to any of them for 5 years. That was not good. And, like, somehow in my mind, I thought that I had a right to that. You know? I was entitled to this thing that they had done to me, you know? And so that was, I mean, it was really, really hard on my family, and they were very, very angry with me, and I was very, very angry with them because they had done me wrong. And they had always done me wrong, you know, that kind of thing. So me and my partner move up to Middle River Retreat, and it's because I saw it in the newspaper while we were living in a house that I have torn apart and have not put back together, with plastic on the walls and big hunks of the floor not there and no kitchen. And, you know, I mean, that's what we were living in one room. And so I decided, well, this would be a great opportunity. So I had bought the one house, and I bought the other house, and this was all a good investment for me, which I, you know, completely blew it and spent all the money I had. And so I decided I'm going to buy this cabin. And I don't have any credit. I don't have a real job. Like, I hadn't paid taxes because I don't have any record that I ever worked. I worked. I did make money, but I don't have any record of it. So I figured out it would be okay for me to get a loan by making up my W-2 form. I mean, my tax form, whatever that thing is, I don't know it, but it's something that has to do with money in the government. I made up a tax return just out of the blue. I went down to the library and got me a tax return and started making it up, and I got a loan just like that. You know, and I think about it, like, how insane would somebody have to be to just, like, make up something like that? And Dee was like, I'm not having any pulse of that, Jamie. You know? So I went out to this cabin, and I think I really wanted that recluseness, you know, so I could really do my thing. And boy, did I, because I found a great place up there with a lot of people who wanted to do their thing, too. And I drank. And I had been drinking every day, I was working here and there, you know. I'd find somewhere good to work where I could, I mean, anytime I worked, I was drinking. I don't even remember working people's jobs. I don't know, you know, like somebody would say, oh, yeah, you did this. And I was like, yeah, I did. I don't remember it, but I did it. It's scary to think, like, what I actually did. And, I got a DUI. This is pretty significant story for an alcoholic. I got a DUI, and it took me 2 years to get through 10 weeks of DUI school. No lie. Okay, so I go to my first DUI court, and I blow positive. I'm like, I didn't know they were going to test us for alcohol when we got there, you know. Dear they. And then, like, every time I go to DUI school, you know, I would get there and I'd have to blow in that thing, and I'd blow positive. And I'd get my restricted license, and the day after I got it, I had to go see my little caseworker or whatever, and darn it, she didn't stick that thing in my mouth, and I blew positive again. I couldn't do it. I drove around drinking, you know, no license, and it was pretty crazy. And then the judge would say, well, you're going to go to jail, or you're going to go to treatment. And I'm like, oh, no, I'm not going to treatment. I've been there a lot already. Yeah. So So I get through all this. My drink, it got so bad. I was drinking every day. I was drinking from the time I got up to the time I went to bed. I hardly slept. I hardly let anybody in my house sleep. I was angry. I was crazy. I could not work. I could not work. I could not function long enough to work for a long time. I worked up in my workshop. What I was doing, I could not tell you, but I had liquor bottles hid all in there and all in the woods and everywhere else. And I remember one time when we talk about surrender, and I know a lot of you guys have heard this story, but a really important part of surrender is when I'm driving, I'm at the liquor store waiting for the liquor store to open, and I'm shaking my guts out, and I can't wait for it to open, and so it opens, and I get my liquor bottle, and I'm not even 3 miles down the road, and I could not wait. I had to crack it open, and I thought at that moment that the first time, you know, I got a strong will. I really had a strong will, and I thought to myself, you know what? You can't stop. And it occurred to me, you can't stop. And since I didn't really know what it was I was going to do, because I'm never going back to AA, never, hate you people, you know, that kind of attitude. I was like, I'm just going to die like this. And a lot of things happened that really I could have died. I was in the psych unit 7 times in a year and a half. I was in wellness recovery twice. I was at Boxwood once. The last time I was in the psych unit, the lady told me that she didn't know what else to do with me, and that if I was to show up in there again, they were going to send me to Stanton and lock me up. So I didn't really care, but at that time, it didn't really seem very real to me. Nothing really seemed very real to me, and I'm going to hurry up and tell you about. I'm just going to tell you about my last experience with alcohol. I had a lot of. I had gotten sober briefly for like 3.5 months, and I relapsed, and then this was not my worst drunk, but believe it or not, this was my last, hopefully, for good. Some reason I was, like, laying in the road out there at Middle River Retreat, and my neighbor saw the dogs running loose and came up to check on me because I was always having some problems up there, and apparently I was laying in the road. They sent the ambulance. They took me to the hospital. We've kind of pieced the story together because I don't remember any of it. And, you know, they had me, and they let me go, and they had me, and then I went to jail, and I don't remember that, and I had a seizure in jail, and so they let me go again, and somehow I ended up in the psych unit, again, getting TDO'd, double handcuffed to the hospital gurney, had to say it, with a security guard out at the door, and, When I woke up out of that, something changed in me, and, you know, people talk about, like, spiritual awakening or whatever. Something changed. I didn't make it happen. It just happened. And I didn't want to do this anymore. And I was so desperate. I was in such a desperate, desperate, desperate place. I was willing to do whatever people told me I needed to do. And, you know, always me, I always wanted to do it my way. You know, well, I'll do parts, but I'm not doing the whole thing. I'm not going the full limit. And, to the maximum, like, what I'm supposed to do. Everything was always Jamie's way. You know, still is sometimes. So I, you know, eventually I get out of the psych unit and I start back in the program, and I was scared. I wasn't scared of, like, being in the program. I was scared of not being in the program, you know, because I knew that this was my last shot. This program was my last shot. I don't think I was going to make it very much longer, you know. You know, I'd been in jail twice, and you know, I'd been in the ICU for overdosing by accident, and I was taking methadone and drinking alcohol. You know, my partner left me. I had nothing. My house was getting foreclosed on. I had no money. I had no job. I had nothing. I didn't have any more alcohol. No way to get it. But I'm sure I could have found a way. But so everything was gone. Everything's gone. So, you know, that puts a person in a state of desperation. And so when I came into the program, I got those first three steps pretty easy. There was no two ways around that. I mean, that was easy. I was ready to do this thing, and I was able to kind of bring that God that I had experienced many years before. Maybe like say, you know, maybe you should come back in. You know, like I need you a little bit more now. And it took me about a year and a half to do my four step. Not because it was really hard, but because I was so out of it. I was out of it for a long time. I mean, I think I got brain damage or something, you know. I got diagnosed with bipolar disorder too, and I was medicated for that, and I'm still medicated for that, which is a good thing, because now I can do this thing, you know. So the fifth step wasn't hard. I had a good sponsor to work with and help me through all this beginning stuff, which was really, really hard. I get to the sixth step, and I don't really think I think I've done the hugest part of my growing in the last year and a half to 2 years. I think my first 2 years, I was just trying to hang on. And so I didn't really get, like, the whole character defect thing because, you know, I got anger issues and I got resentments and I got, you know, control issues and I got all these character defects. And, you know, it's kind of like alcohol. You know, like, I can't just make them go away by myself. I can't do it. I try to do it. Maybe it's just, like, weak-minded or something. But, you know, I just couldn't, and I still can't just get rid of that stuff. And so I had to go through, and I have to go through a lot. I mean, it's not just like I did that a while back and now I don't do it anymore. I have to do it a lot because I have a lot of character defects. And they show themselves quite frequently. And so if I can identify what is going on with me, then I can do something different. And I try to talk to them about those things in meetings, and I like to listen to other people share about what they do and stuff. And then I go to step seven, and that's the turning over part, giving those character defects to God, because I can't manage them and I can't fix them and I can't make them go away by myself. It's like one of those things that, you know, something's going on in your life and you're like, you want to feel differently about it. Like, you really, like, in your mind, you want to feel differently about it, but in your heart, you just really can't. And, you know, when I'm in that place, I really just have to ask, you know, the God of my understanding to remove that from me. And sometimes it takes a while. So when I get to, you know, all the amends thing, I'm still working on those. I've been working on those. I've gotten to do some amends. I have a lot more amends to do with people because I made a huge mess. I hurt a lot of people. I did some damage, and I can't take it back. I can ask my higher power. My higher power can't even take it back. So damage is done. And, I've had pretty good success with asking, I did my amends with my dad. It was very hard because, the hardest thing, my dad doesn't talk a whole lot, so the hardest thing is, to sit down with him and have, that kind of conversation. And it was very, very hard, and it was very scary. But I did that, and I think he has a lot more, respect for me. Actually doing that. And, the rest of my family, it's been kind of difficult. I shared the other night that I want to tell my family, I want to say, okay, I'm making an appointment to do amends with you. And they go, oh, good, because I got some things I want to tell you, I want to say I'm sorry for. And I want to say, can you just let me have my day? So, and then when I've tried to get it together, I don't think they really want me to do that. My family drinks a lot. So I'm on 8, 8, 8, 9. There's a lot of amends, like I was saying, that for me, I can't take them back. I can't do it over. I can't make it go away. And, to say the amends, to say take responsibility for what I've done, it is really like a tiny part of it. The rest of it, to me, is, don't do it again and do something better. And I grow slow. I do. I grow slow. I'm trying to do the right thing, and I try not to hurt people today, and I try to, I say you know a lot now. I do that. I try to make my amends. If I do something, I try to do it then, because I don't want to have to make that list again and go back and start. That's hard to do. I didn't ever do this book before. One, I don't read. Yes, I graduated from college. I don't read. I've never read a book in my life. Seriously, no lie. Never read a book in my life. Probably hadn't read 2 chapters in a book in my life. But so I picked up a big book study. And you know what? We all read together. And then we talk about it. So I was so proud of myself when I got through the first 164 pages. I wanted them to throw me a party, But I didn't really get it. And now that I get it, I get this program a lot better. And we keep reading it. And one day I might quote something out of it, but not today. Maybe later. I'm doing pretty good, aren't I? Let's see. I do have a sponsee that I'm grateful to have, because it's really good, and it helps me to go through my process, this process of AA, with somebody else. And it kind of, it's kind of like in school. I did really well in certain classes, and I can make charts and graphs and stuff. And we would have, class, you'd have groups and stuff that would meet. Well, I would get this stuff, and other people might not get that, but I could teach it to somebody else. And when I taught somebody else, I really reinforced it in myself. So that's kind of what, sponsorship is like to me, is that I'm doing the steps too. At the same time that, I'm trying to help somebody else to do the steps. And I'm a very selfish person still, and I'm very selfish with my time. So it really helps me to give my time to somebody else because they need it, and you know, it's to benefit AA. It's kind of like coming up here to speak. You know, it's for the good of AA, and when you're asked to do something in AA, you should do it if at all possible. I don't think I would have done this before, and I don't think I would have done this without knowing that that I'm part of a really big picture, but I'm just a little part, a little baby part. We're all little babies on this planet, and you know, I want to. I have so much gratitude to AA. You know, this place I didn't want to be. Nobody wants to be. They say the AA is the largest free organization in the world that nobody wants to join. let's see. I have a lot more to share, but I think I'm going to have to call it quits. But I really want to congratulate Dale on 1 year. I've watched Dale work really, really hard for this. I wish everybody a really Merry Christmas and a sober Christmas, and I'm glad to have that I have family to spend Christmas with that that I'm a part of and not apart from, and I have so much gratitude for that because I did a lot of damage in that area too. So thanks for letting me share.